Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 812th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Greg Peterson from Urban Farm U and the Urban Farm Podcast. We are here tonight with Bill McDormand. Hello, Bill.
Hello, hello, everyone. Happy to be here as usual.
Yeah, love that we get to do these. I get to catch up with you at least once a month, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So tonight we are talking about seed-borne diseases. Seed-borne diseases quietly jeopardize the vitality of crops as seeds unwittingly harbor microscopic threats like fungi, bacteria, and pests. We're going to help you identify these pesky pests and guide you through the measures to screen for disease-resistant seeds to thwart these covert adversaries. Oh my gosh, there we go.
I wish I could do that. I'm not always very good at it, but I do have some general principles to start with, I think, that could save people a lot of steps around these sorts of things. And I'll talk about the ones that I have learned to identify. How's that?
Uh-huh. Good.
Yeah. First of all, I've noticed that there can be almost an irrational fear about this.
Yes.
When people first hear about it. And it's understandable if you are, again, an industrial scale farmer. This is part of the scale problem.
Oh, yes.
It can have some devastating consequences if you only have three tomato plants and they all get, and all three of them get wiped out in your yard, but it's not your livelihood.
Right.
It's not millions of dollars. And you have to put it in perspective. And if you're growing three different kinds of tomatoes, there's a good chance one of them, if not two of them, will be resistant or could be.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as small scale people, we get to have more freedom around these things. As far as general things to learn about seed-borne diseases, there's Westcott's, the big, thick manual. At one point, I did a lot of research, and it probably costs $75 now.
Oh, wow.
If you want to buy it. And they've got a lot of pictures and descriptions and whatever of all the plant diseases that you can find, and they detail which ones are seed-borne. So if you're on your way to get a master's for this stuff, there are resources for you.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I found is that I just didn't use it very much. And I'll tell you why. It's because almost all of those problems are very regionally, if not neighborhood bounded.
Oh.
And so when you have a problem, you can get way more good information about what to do and the extent of the problem and how much damage it's going to cause by asking your neighbors first to see if they're having the same problem. And then this is the key that I learned. This is where the whole county extension, even Master Gardener program, really kicks in. I have a lot of questions about that program and the resources they use and some of their ties to chemicals and the use of chemicals sometimes, because I didn't really want to do that. But around seed-borne diseases, they have access usually to state labs and can get really definitive information for you. And that's the first step. Find out exactly what's wrong with what's going on with your crops. And the best way to do that is ask your local expert. And the land grant college system was set up. Lincoln started it, and then it got more funding later, clear up into the 50s. So every state could have a center of agricultural learning to answer questions like this. And then those, they quickly found out in each state, if you live in Texas or Arizona, where we have people farming at 7,000 feet and people farming down in the desert, you need some diversity within your state to answer questions. And that's where the county extension agents come from. They're extensions of the university in your state that is the agricultural college.
Mm-hmm.
And so ask your county extension. They've been paid since the 1800s to figure these kinds of things out. And they're usually ahead of the game and can answer your questions about what's going on. So that's the easy answer. And it took me a long time to figure that out. So if you don't know that, and you're one of those do-it-yourself people, you're trying to trying to do everything on your own, then you could run into trouble. Yeah.
Interesting you should say the cooperative extension agent. When I got here, we've got 4 acres right outside of Asheville, and we're turning it into a farm. It was 4 acres and we're farming it. And I met shortly after we arrived, I met with Megan, our cooperative extension agent. And she spent an hour here. I was telling her what we were up to. And I have another appointment with her on Thursday to look, see our progress after 2 years. And there's been a couple of times where I just picked up the phone and called her and said, hey, what's going on here? And she was very helpful.
See, so there's a lesson in this, right? You're Greg Peterson of the Urban Farm. You've been doing this longer than anybody, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You're the expert. You're the guy that they hire to answer questions. And yet you're, because largely because I would say you're in a new location.
Exactly.
You're reaching out. Smart. You're reaching out to the people locally that could help you most to get up and running around what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the lesson for everyone, especially around seaborne diseases.
Lori says, wondering about verticillium wilt. What is that for us?
They're bacterial pathogens that get into plants. And it's one of the most common. And there's, if I remember correctly, and somebody could maybe correct me if I'm wrong, there are hundreds of variations. And back in the day, when I was first getting going, it would get into tomatoes. It would get into some of the other leafy crops.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to remember if spinach was one of those. It's either verticillium or fusarium. Those are both the number one and number two. And there was a time when you could open up Johnny's selected seed catalog, and they would tell you if their varieties were resistant to either or both. And sometimes they were. And then it started getting complicated. There was verticillium 1 and verticillium 2. And then there were other variants, and it could be. So it's always been that kind of a game, right? You get a resistance, and then the pathogen finds a way around your resistance. So it mutates slightly.
So verticillium wilt is caused by the soil-borne fungi.
Oh, it's a fungus. All right.
Both infect a wide range of garden plants through the roots and then grow upwards in the water conducting tissues, causing wilt of the upper parts due to water stress.
There you go.
And what was the other one?
Fusarium.
Oh, yes.
And that's of particular interest to me now, because that gets into grain.
So fusarium wilt is also a fungal-borne disease.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, they're both fungal-based.
There are a lot of resistant varieties. One of the first things that people will tell you, or maybe your extension agent will tell you, is will ask you, actually, if you're top watering.
Oh, yes.
Almost all of my wilt problems went away when I stopped watering. And I don't know, you know, how that affected the spread, maybe or not. That's the first thing to do, is if you can get into drip or keep the tops of your plants dry, or at least dry them out before early evening, afternoon, early evening, when it gets cooler and more conducive to fungus, then you'll avoid a lot of those problems. Step two is then to find, if you really have the problem, is to find resistant varieties.
Yeah.
And as I said, there's a lot of them out there, if that in that, especially in tomatoes, but you can find it in all sorts of other crops. I haven't looked at a Johnny's catalog now for about 3 or 4 years, but they used to have a key, and everything they sold, if it was resistant, they would tell you. Be a little F1, F2, something like that.
I guess it was the fusarium wilt that hit our tomatoes here. Interestingly, so I have a really wild story. We planted 160 fruit trees last summer of 2023, and I used a handful of worm castings from my worm bag on each of the plants. And what happened was is that tomato plants grew out in the rows with the fruit trees. So I actually had
Wow.
tomato plants coming up in the fruit tree rows
Right. Wow.
from the worm castings. And
Oh, yeah.
at one point last summer, July, August, September, October, we were harvesting 5 pounds of tomatoes a day. And
Wow.
one of the things that that happened also is the tomatoes that we were watering in our garden were getting this black wilt that happened to them. The ones
Wow.
out in the rows of fruit trees that were just surviving on rainwater didn't get that.
Wow.
So that is a watering thing.
Yeah. That's cool that you figured it out.
Yeah.
That you had an AB, you had some
Right.
one way and some the other way. And I always recommend that people do that.
That's a soil-borne disease. What seed-borne diseases are there that?
Well, Fusarium and Verticillium can be seed-borne. And so that's why you want to be careful. If you've got varieties that are getting hit, don't save those seeds and don't get those seeds or plants in and around your other stuff. If you have disease, pull the whole plants and get rid of them and then wash your hands. You don't want to go back out and start touching stuff. Somebody told me that if I got Fusarium in my soil, it'd be there for 3 years or whatever, and everything would be. And I've never had that problem. It's never lasted for me. And maybe that's because of the drip irrigation, rotating crops. All of those are good practices to help avoid those sorts of things. Yeah. And here's the other thing about, and I think this pertains, and those of you listening can get a chuckle over this if you want. But you're sitting here talking to two people that live in one of the dry, who Greg lived in Phoenix for all those years at the urban farm,
55
right?
years, man.
I've been in Cornville, Arizona for 17 or 18 years. And least likely place to have diseases like this, simply because it gets so dry. It's hot and dry. Almost all of the really bad ones happen in areas that are more moist, that have higher humidity, especially during the growing season. And so you're probably now getting your education in disease.
Big time, big time. We've been here 2 years now, and it's been interesting to watch the level of disease that is here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of water. We
Right.
get 7 to 12 inches a year in the low desert. We get 40 to 50 inches a year here, so that brings on a lot.
Wow.
And the incidence of all kinds of pestilence and disease are much greater here.
Right. Yeah, and it is water then also, and we're starting to see this with climate change. I am even in Cornville growing grain. I'm getting rain when I don't want it or need it. Grain is the perfect food for fungus. And the history of fungus in grain is famous, right? That's where there's great stories out there about the Salem witch trials. Ergot, a different fungus, got into the grain, and ergot mold produces LSD or lysergic acid.
Oh my
And
gosh.
so there's really good scientific documentation that the Salem witch trials happened because there was an ergot breakout in Salem,
Oh.
Massachusetts, that was tied, and they know what the weather was like that year. It was an unusually wet late summer
Yeah.
that would have caused it. And then the symptoms of these women who had visions and went absolutely mad, so to speak, and were hung as witches because of this mold that got into their grain. And so if you want to dig into that story, it's really a fascinating one. The seedborne disease, or the disease that concerns me with migraines, is Fusarium. And I've been around enough grain people now, and I didn't know this, is that if you're around it and you're experienced and you don't have a lot of it, you can see it because it turns your kernels pink. And it's a slightly off pink color. And that was really a wake up for me, especially in wheat. And you can lay, if you're, again, the advantages of being a small scale grower, if you're hand threshing and you clean your grain, you lay it out, you can pick out the pink. You should be careful about the whole amount and maybe not plant anything in that lot back into your field because you may not get them all and then you're replanting it. But still, you can get rid of enough of it to eat your crop. At least that's what I was told. So that's an interesting, the visual. I'd never known that you could actually visually see it on the seeds, but that's a real wake up. And I'm going to do more research around that.
Wow. So damping off is also a seed-borne disease, is it not?
Damping off is a fungus that attacks the young stems that first come out of the ground and eats through them so they fall off. And so keeping moisture away from your soil surface is the key there, if you can.
Yeah. So let's talk about, for seeds, what do we need to do? I guess number one is if we are experiencing this, you already mentioned, pull the plants out, ideally with gloves, throw the gloves away and dispose of the plant that way. What about buying seeds?
Nobody wants to be the person that sells you seeds that are diseased.
Yeah.
And there's a huge backline. I mean, each state has different rules. In Idaho, I had to keep samples of every lot of seed that I sold so that if somebody did have a problem, I would get a call. And this only happened in 28 years. It happened twice. I got a call from a county extension agent that was helping, saying, hey, look, we've traced this back to your seeds. And I said, okay, when were they purchased? Then I could link because of the dates back to the lot and I would have a sample of the lot and I could send that in and get them tested to see if it actually came from the seeds. And in the cases where I was accused, both times there were no diseases on the sample of seeds that I had stored. That doesn't mean that they weren't on there when I shipped them, but it just on the sample, there weren't. At least in the West, it's a pretty rare occurrence.
Yeah.
As far as you introducing seeds. The other thing then is that if you have some sort of organization to your seeds and you have a problem, don't plant any more of those. That just makes sense. And look at them. That's what I'm learning about the wheat seeds that I have. I'm looking, now I'm looking, and there are different clues. I wish I was more experienced about this, but in a way, I'm glad I'm not, right? If I'd run into the problem over and over again, I would be up and running on it. It's the general approach to it that I learned that, again, to take the stress off people. I'm interested, are people that are listening, have you had particular problems and what happened? What was the disease?
Yeah.
What happened to you? I'd be really interested. And where do you live so that we can maybe see if this supports our conclusion that if you're in a drier climate or a higher elevation one, the way I was, then it's not going to be a problem.
Yeah. One of the things I've noticed is that I am not experienced with disease. Donna says I've had no problems here in Arizona. Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. I was just confirming that, Donna. There's not a lot to go wrong because there's not a lot of moisture there.
Now, let me just talk about one other disease that I do have some experience with, and that is black rot, and it attacks the cabbage family plants.
Oh,
Okay. The brassicas. And it's a fungus that gets taken up in the vascular bundles that pull water up into the plant, gets established there. And they call it black rot because if it's broccoli and you cut it off at the stem, the whole center of the stem will be black. Or it gets up into cabbage and the centers of cabbages turn black. And that can be a seed-borne disease. And so there are, and you can look for a formula if you want. I'm sure they're all over the internet now. Back in the day, you could clean your seed at home by putting the seed in boiling water.
Really?
Only you didn't want it to be quite boiling And you had to be really careful how long it was in there. So here, yeah, you want to keep seeds cool, dark, and dry. And here you are soaking them in hot water. And so the idea was that you wanted to leave them in hot water long enough to kill the disease without harming the seeds. And that's a fine line. And but I'm just throwing it out this to people that this was an old solution that had been used. There are probably chemicals now that you could use.
Yeah.
Fungicide.
Black rot is caused by a bacteria. And it's got a big old long name.
Oh, it's a bacteria. See, I'm getting them mixed up. I thought it was a fungus. All right.
This bacteria can infect any plant in the Brassicaceae family, but right. tends to be most damaging on broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower and kale. And black rot often enters farms and gardens via infected seed.
There you go.
Yeah. Donald says, I think I had powdery mildew last fall. That's, and I believe Donald's in
watering. Where do you live?
Donald's in Phoenix.
Okay.
And so it's pretty dry there, but top watering would do that, wouldn't it?
I've had no powdery mildew in Arizona once I stopped top watering.
Yeah.
And it may be that he's got misters on out by the pool too, or something that would cause moisture yeah. in the air that would do that. And what I've always done, my philosophy for powdery mildew is to outgrow it. I try to plant enough squash that it keeps growing. If I've ever had it, it's only during a certain part of the year, early on, or I've had it actually late in the year when we had monsoons and we had 3 or 4 days of rain. But I don't really ever worry about it. If you're growing vine squash, the vines grow on, new leaves come up,
yep.
and it goes on. It's never a persistent or debilitating yeah. problem in Arizona, in my experience.
Vanessa posted, I've used hot water treatment on tomato seeds since there are so many diseases that affect tomatoes. Many university extensions have info on hot water treatment. She sent over a Cornell University article on it, managing pathogens inside seed with hot water. I had no clue. I had no clue. Thank you, Vanessa and Bill. Steve says, is corn smut the black growth that sometimes appears in corn? On corn, is it a seed-borne or environmental disease? Corn smut is a fungus. This I'm pretty sure about that, isn't it, Bill?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, corn smut is a fungus. I guess it could come from seed or could come from being airborne.
It spores, and those spores are windborne. Mm-hmm. So it can spread that way. Obviously, then, because it's spreading that way, it can get onto seeds, and then it gets spread by the seeds.
Yeah.
But again, you can control that with your environment.
Yeah.
And or variety.
And corn smut's a delicacy.
Yeah. I learned that in Tucson. Yeah. When yeah. corn smut, wheat lacoche is the southwestern word, a native word they use for it. Wheat lacoche. Mm. That's Spanish, I think. And a field of corn that's been devastated by wheat lacoche is actually worth more.
Right.
Than if it was just corn.
Yeah.
And it's usually never devastates a whole field. It just picks out certain ears where the water has gotten down into the cob itself and it starts to eat the sugar and the forming kernels. Yeah. So the cobs have to be formed. They have to be pollinated. There's a lot of, and then the water has to happen at a certain time. Now, if this is a problem and you don't want it, I only selected seed for my corn from ears that had a really tight top.
Oh. So
sometimes the tops of ears of corn are open a little bit and the rain yeah. can get down in there. And those are the ones where you'll get wheat lacoche.
Interesting seed selection technique that I never would have thought about.
Yeah, I guess this happened because I was at Native Seed Search and in the Southwest, and there's a lot of talk about these sorts of things, but yeah. that is an environmental thing. And so after 3 or 4 years, almost all my corn now has really tight tops. And I did that because of our monsoons.
Oh.
I was growing my corn for tortillas, not for wheat lacoche. And I still get it occasionally. I love it when I get it. If you do have corn smut, get it early. Before it turns black, if a gray slimy looking fungus. It's a mushroom.
It's a mushroom.
And pull them out, slice them up, pan fried with a little butter. Oh my God. It is so good.
Nice.
I was thinking maybe one more thing we could talk about really quickly is mosaic virus, which gets into beans, and that can be seed borne. And that's a real problem for industrial agriculture, especially in Arizona and in Idaho. There are seed disease police in both states hunting around any lead for any sign of bean mosaic virus. And there's several different strains. So you want to be careful with that. We had some of the beans seed at Native Seed Search tested when I was there's director when Bella and I were there, and it came back positive, some of it.
Interesting.
And they were threatening to shut down the whole, all the beans. We have 500 varieties of beans, and we were shipping them out to people all over the world. And there was talk that they were going to shut down that whole operation because they didn't want us shipping in bean mosaic virus to people. And probably what happened, and I don't think it was in all the beans, and we continually tested it, and the whole concern seemed to go away after a while. But the problem with in ex situ, they call it seed conservation. Uh-huh. And by that, seed banks.
Right.
Well, the problem is you have to grow everything out occasionally, right? After 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you have to grow those varieties out because the bean seed starts to die in your seed bank. So you take some out and you grow it out. That was accomplished at Native Seed Search. It took about 10 years to grow all the different varieties, but we grew them all out in the same field. And so of the 500 bean varieties, something had bean mosaic virus. It probably got into the soil. And then we spread it to many other varieties ourselves in the same field over a number of years because it never rose to prominence and actually hurt the plants, but it was there.
Bean yellow mosaic, that's the one that came up, is caused by the yellow mosaic virus. This virus can infect beans, gladiolas, clovers, peas, lupine, and pumpkins. Wow. And it looks like the leaves are bleached out.
Yes. Yeah. And tip, if you're one of our Arizona listeners, grow tepary beans.
Yes.
Tepary beans are totally immune to it. If you're
totally.
They can carry it. It can be on the seeds. They can carry it into your thing. But they're completely immune. They've gotten beyond it. They don't care. They carry it, but they don't care.
Interesting.
So I've had people do that. They had bean mosaic virus. They just moved into tepary beans, which are a native, if you don't know, they're a native wild plant to Arizona. Tepary beans are.
Yeah.
They were just selected over we don't know how long to give us the large beans. And they're delicious. And you can get them from Ramona Farms if you're interested.
Gloria says verticillium can go after maple trees, many veggies, and in the vascular system. So a maple tree may lose 1 out of 3 of 10 branches. So lose branches.
Wow.
She also said we had it on black capped raspberries. Considered putting asparagus resistant asparagus in. Oh, and she makes a good point. Use 90% alcohol to clean pruners in between plants. That's always a good thing to do, is clean your pruners.
All you have to do in Phoenix is sit them out in the 120 degree weather, right?
Oh, you might be surprised, Bill. You might be surprised. It may live right through that.
Wow. If you're buying a disease resistant variety, if you're purchasing seeds, say you've had problems with Fusarium verticillium, one of these other things, and you find a variety in one of the catalogs that's resistant to that, almost always they're hybrids.
Oh, yes.
It's because that allows them to cross in that resistance relatively quickly to a really good variety. And so if you're a seed saver, that's a problem, right? But it's not a problem if you have the time. So save your seeds from your hybrids for disease resistance. And how do you tell? They're resistant. If everything else is going down in your yard still, save the ones that are resistant, and you can stabilize those lines and make them open pollinated so you can give them to your friends, take them to a seed library. So it doesn't have to be a barrier to us having our own, our own seeds.
You've told a story before about a gentleman that it was a broccoli planted out.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me that story, because it's all
well, it was black rot, and it was John Navazio, okay. And it was in Washington, and it was horrible, and it was getting everything. And they brought him in. He said, take me to the worst field. Yeah, there is. And it was in a county, and they went down, and they went to this guy who got totally wiped out. And they said, this is the place. And there were some remnants left or whatever. And he goes, okay, look, we're going to do an experiment. Can we use this field? And they go, yeah, but why would you want to do that? This is the most infected field. He goes, exactly.
Yeah.
And they rounded up as many different varieties of broccoli as they could. He got as much diversity as he could find, and they planted it in that field. And sure enough, everybody said, waste of time, John. They're all going to die. And they were right. They all died except for a couple of them that made it. And he goes, bingo. There's your answer.
There you go.
Save the seeds. There's the start to your road back. And sometimes that doesn't work the first time. I mean, you don't have the diversity. That's why we need all the diversity that we have.
There you go.
Never know. That's why we're such diversity freaks, just for that story. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you, Bill. Next month is seed time, how to plant your seeds. We're going to talk about planting seeds.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. And we'll catch you on the flip side, Bill.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, you bet. Helen right. says thank you. Donna says very interesting topic. Thanks, everybody. Have a good
All
one.
All right. Take care. See
Talk
you soon.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.